Hello, this is Bill Harris, and I want to welcome you to the Masters of the Secret series. Tonight's guest is my good friend Lisa Nichols, one of the stars of the hit DVD movie The Secret, and a recent guest on Oprah. Through her organization, Motivating the Teen Spirit, Lisa has impacted the lives of more than 60,000 teens, and she's prevented over 1,750 teen suicides. She is, quite frankly, one of the most amazing human beings I know. Despite being labeled one of the worst writers by her English teacher, she's landed three major book publishing deals with the best-selling Chicken Soup for the Soul series, and she's co-author of Chicken Soup for the African American Soul and Chicken Soup for the African American Woman's Soul. She's appeared as an expert life coach on NBC's hit show Starting Over. She was one of the 27 leading teachers featured in the international hit DVD The Secret. And she keeps, very deservedly, winning awards for all the good she does in the world. She's received the 2006 Rising Star Award, the 2003 Trailblazers Entrepreneur Award, the Legoland Heart of Learning Award, the Emotional Literacy Award, and November 20th is Motivating the Teen Spirit Day, as proclaimed by the mayor of Henderson, Nevada. In 2006, in June, Lisa was honored as the keynote speaker in Johannesburg, South Africa, by the Sob Omvu Youth Fund for her commitment to youth entrepreneurship and empowering the human spirit. And she's also my buddy. Aren't you, sweetie?
Hi there. So exciting to be with you, Bill.
Yes, we're going to have some fun today.
So I'm looking forward to it.
I know that you were just on Oprah, so tell us a little bit about what it was like to be on Oprah.
Absolutely amazing. From the moment we stepped into the Harpo, Inc. Studios, we were greeted with the warmth that you see that comes from Oprah Winfrey from stage and from television. From the security guards to the assistant producers, everyone was so excited to have us there. There was an energy of anticipation. You could tell that they had all seen The Secret. And when we walked into the studios, it was really amazing because only maybe 40% of the audience had seen The Secret, and the other 60% was just excited about the conversation. And then when Miss Winfrey came out, it was really a moment to remember. She said, "I've been trying and attempting to teach this lesson for years, and finally there's something, an amazing tool to help." And then she, it was like the cavalry had come in to help her confirm and affirm this a powerful conversation. And she was just grateful. She had a grateful energy. She was just like, "Tell us more, tell us more." We would talk through the commercials, and then we did an after show because the energy was just, the buzz was so high. People were jumping up and down to speak, to share how The Secret had changed their lives. It was just really, really amazing. She was very humble, very grateful. You can tell that she was being a teacher in her role and a student at the same time, asking us to repeat certain phrases, to repeat certain lessons, and, you know, getting her own personal ahas while the audience is getting theirs. It was really a wonderful, life-changing, moving experience, and I am grateful to have been there.
And, of course, she's being pretty humble in the, I mean, she knows how this law works, obviously, being one of the richest people in the United States already. She has to know how all of this works, so but that's just like her to be humble about the whole thing.
Yes, yes. She immediately jumped out front with the statement, you know, "What you think about most grows. What you give energy to, it expands." So she knew immediately. I mean, that is a very simple and powerful line. What you give energy to expands. And she kept saying that throughout the entire show. And yet, you're right, she was very humble. We would say different phrases or just different ways to say it. And when she found a new way to say the same thing, she would go, Oh, that's great. Repeat that again. Say that again. Oh, I got to remember that. I have to write that down later." She was just really great. And what she did was she kept the energy around everyone being able to be taught simultaneously because, of course, we're thinking if Oprah Winfrey is allowing herself to be a student, then anyone and everyone in the room should allow themselves to remain a student as well, which I'm really excited about because sometimes we block our own blessings because we're not listening with our listening ears. We're not hearing with our open heart. And she definitely had her listening ears on and her open heart.
And, you know, a lot of times one way of saying a certain principle, people get it, but some people don't get it. And then when you say it in another way, then suddenly the aha happens for them. So it's good to say these things in a lot of different ways. So when I know you work a lot with kids, with teens, what's the main thing, and you know, this doesn't have to necessarily be about the secret necessarily, but what's the main thing you're trying to get across to these kids?
Well, I appreciate the question, Bill, and I think everything I do in touch has to do with the secret in some way or another, because it's the right. Law of attraction. And for teens, their mind, their thoughts, their requests in the universe are as powerful as adults are. And so one of the things I teach to them is that you are defining and designing your life right at this moment. You are designing the quality of your life at this moment. They're in a period of time where they feel like they have zero control. Everyone is telling them what to do. If it's not the principal, it's the parent. If it's not the parent, it's the neighbor. Everyone's telling them what to do, so they feel like they are in the least amount of control. And so one of the primary things that we teach inside our seminars and workshops with teens is we show them how much in the driver's seat they are, not going against any of the adult authorities, the adult figures in their lives rules, but how much of their joy, peace, bliss, and happiness really has to do with what they're looking forward to or what they're expecting or what they're claiming. One of the examples I use with my teens is if you get up in the morning and say, God, my mom is always nagging me. She's always nagging me. And you see your mom and the first thing she says is, honey, come eat your breakfast. You're going to think, oh, my God, she's nagging me. Versus my mom loved me enough to make me breakfast, to give me nourishment, so that when I walk out that door, I'm operating on a full stomach.
You know, You're making a really good point, and I think it's one of the most fundamental points, because with all of my students, one of the key things is getting people to realize that they are creating their life, that they actually have a lot of power.
Absolutely.
And you the way you said it, it just kind of reminded me that lots of people think that power comes from outside of them.
Yeah.
So, you know, a teenager has all kinds of people who really do have external power over a lot of things in their life.
Yeah.
And their attention tends to go to those examples, and they don't realize, and nobody, very few people anyway, are teaching them, that there's a tremendous power inside of them that they need to get aware of and learn how to use, and that's the power of how they focus their mind. And so I, you know, teach mostly adults, but a lot of those adults are no different than these teens in the sense that they don't realize that they have this power inside. And one of the reasons they don't realize it is because they're spending lots and lots of energy focusing on what they don't want, like the teenager saying, Mom always nags me. That's
right.
Something that the child doesn't want, and by focusing on that, they notice things that they could interpret that way. They attract more of that into their life, and these adults are the same way. They're focusing on all the things they don't want, and then they're creating those things, and they don't realize that that's a power they have, and they're exercising it. They're just exercising it about the things they don't want instead of about the things they do want. It's
Absolutely.
Actually, you know, you can flip that switch to what you want fairly easily. I mean, there may be a habit to overcome, but you can flip that switch, and then all of a sudden, all this stuff you want starts appearing in your life.
Absolutely, and it's the same formula for teens. It's the conversation is packaged a little more basic, which is really good for them. You know, we give it to them in digestible, palatable bite sizes. We give it to them in a language around the things they want. If you walk into class and say, I'm going to fail this test. Oh, my God, I'm going to fail this test. I'm going to fail this test. And then you end up getting a D. You're actually surprised because what you thought would happen didn't exactly happen. You don't know how you got a D. You're totally thrown by the D. What would have happened if you said, I'm going to get an A, I'm going to get an A? And so we really teach them from a very practical stage and a very practical place on things that they can do right then. Like, what can I do right now? We have this lesson called negative self-talk, or self-talk, I should say. And in the lesson called self-talk, we portray as if our head is a boombox, a big radio, and it has two CD players in that boombox. And one CD is filled with our negative self-talk, and the other CD is a space for powerful self-talk. But unfortunately, the negative self-talk CD is full. It's fully loaded, 21 tracks, and the powerful self-talk CD has like one track on it. And that little one track is something nice someone said to you 20 years ago that you're still trying to decide if you want to believe or not, but you're holding on to it.
And the volume is low.
And the volume is low. And so we really take them through a process, Bill, where they hear and we have them play everything, all that junk that's on that negative self-talk CD, and then we go a step further. We have them look at what it's created in their lives. Now, with that exercise normally comes a lot of tears, but a lot of ahas. They begin to realize in that moment, some for the very first time, many for the very first time, Bill, that they have been the artist that have created the masterpiece or the mesterpiece, you know, all this mess in their life, that they have been the person painting this painting called yuck. And so that's my very intellectual word. And so they then see, oh, my God. So then we support them to create a powerful self-talk, to lay new tracks on that second CD. What can you replace all of that negative energy with? What are the words that eliminates that? And it's not don't and not. You can't say those things. You can't go there. But what can you put on there? So we actually, for the first time in many of their lives, we help them lay new tracks on a new CD so that they can begin to access a new resource in their heads, with their boombox, with their double CD player.
Well, and I've seen you do this in front of kids, and it is amazing. And then the kids go home and start teaching this to their parents, too, probably also could use it. You know, one of the things that I run up against when I'm teaching this to my students is that when they start saying some of these positive things, they tell me, well, gee, when I said that, I did feel better, and things did start to work out better in my life, but I felt like I was lying to myself.
Right.
And so what I tell them is that instead of saying something as if it's true when there's a part of you that doesn't really think it's true yet, I tell them to ask questions to themselves, to ask how can I questions. So if you wanted to, you know, instead of saying, I have lots of friends and people like me, which would be, you know, a typical affirmation, I might have them say, how can I get lots of friends and have lots of people like me? And I have them just go around asking themselves that question. And the more you ask that question, the more ideas start coming to you about how you could actually make that happen. And it's a great little question that gets people past worrying about saying something to themselves that they don't think is true yet, and it also causes your mind to just get flooded with ideas.
Right, and I think that's a wonderful idea and tool. And in addition to something like that, one of the things that I work with my teens and my adults, by the way, every single lesson that I do with my teens, I do with adults because we are, you know, adults inside of 15, 17, 18, 21-year-old conversations and moments in our lives where something happened. So when I'm working with adults and teens, one of the things that and I agree so much with what you just said, Bill, but also getting them to be okay with where they are now. You know, one of the things that we learn in The Secret is that gratitude attracts more gratefulness. It attracts more things to be grateful for.
Right.
And really turning up the gratitude volume, really looking at the, you know, these days in my life, I have book publishers, major book publishers coming after me, and people want to do documentaries and international book tours, and there's so much that I can easily feel overwhelmed. And I've been working on, you know, staying inside of peace and bliss. And one of the things that I say is, you know, God, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to have to manage this abundance. Thank you. I say that normally when I feel like my head's about to spin around, and I'm gurgling under phone calls. But I begin to immediately go to the thank you for the opportunity for me to have to manage the abundance. Find the gratitude in anything. Find the gratitude in everything, because gratitude attracts more things to be grateful for, and the universe cannot and will not open up and give you anything else or better until you become grateful for what you first have.
That's a
really important piece as we're working to what we want. You know, everyone's always reaching out in front of them as if success, joy, and bliss are right around the corner, eluding them by one half a step. Well, slow down for a moment and look at what you have. Celebrate that, love that, embrace that, honor that, and then watch everything. Watch the floodgates open.
Yeah, and you know, now that you have all this stuff coming at you, all these opportunities, it is in a sense a problem. I mean, it's a challenge. It's but it's a luxury problem.
It's a quality problem.
You know what I like to call a luxury problem, and you know, I'm sure anybody listening to this would rather be managing abundance.
Right.
Than managing, you know, some
lack
sort of
lack and scarcity.
Yeah, lack and scarcity. You know, this question I mentioned a minute ago, this "how can I" question, it brings up another thing that I think is really important about the secret and the law of attraction that a lot of people I think miss. And I know you and I have talked about this before. When you say "how can I," and then you finish that sentence with whatever it is you want, one of the implications of that is that you're going to be taking some sort of action to get whatever it is you want. And one of the things I noticed about The Secret is that I know, as you do, almost everybody that's in that program, and every one of us that were on The Secret take massive action all the time, and yet it doesn't get mentioned that much in that program, unfortunately. And the reason I think that's a problem is that there are some people out there who do what I call believing in magic, who think that all they have to do is think and put it out to the universe and envision it, and somehow it's going to happen without them taking action. So how do you see that, Lisa?
You know, I appreciate you saying that. James Ray said something really funny on the Oprah show. He said that, you know, we tend to think that there's going to be some magic happening, and you're sitting on your couch and you're just visualizing and saying, okay, this is what I want, universe. This is what I want, universe, but you're not taking any action. They're going to come and take your furniture that you're sitting on, and you're going to be visualizing, and you're going to be visualizing from the curb. So I agree to what you're saying so much. And when you want movement in your life and you want a shift in your life, many people spend a lot of time thinking about it, and then they spend a lot of time talking about it, so they actually think they're in action about it when they're actually not. They're just talking about it and just thinking about it, and that's very different than being in action. You know, I heard something really great one time, and it's a quote from someone. I don't know the name, but I love the statement. It says, the antidote for despair is to be in action.
Yeah.
The antidote for despair is to be in action. I also believe the formula for success is to be in action. That action is the main seasoning in your life. Everything else is the preparation, but the baking in the oven, the getting it done, the getting it right, that's all done in action. And so many times we spend so much time in preparation, in thought or in conversation, that we never get to action. And people say, why isn't it happening? You haven't done anything. You've just talked about it or thought about it, pondered about it or planned it. You haven't been in movement about it. And so I'm glad you brought that point up, Bill. It's real important for us to make a distinction between analyzing, assessing, discussing, and action.
Well, you know, I get at least one letter every day from someone who says, I have been visualizing this and saying affirmations and putting it out to the universe now for, you know,
right,
weeks and weeks and weeks.
Right.
And then they say, how long does it take?
For it to come and land on my shoulder.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
And
yeah.
I say, well, it's at you know, unless you take action, it's going to take forever.
Right.
And what I've realized after dealing with a lot of people who think this way is that people who feel powerless, which we were talking about earlier, that one of the first things you've got to realize is that everybody has this power to focus your mind and therefore attract certain things into your life. But if you feel powerless, magic is really attractive. The idea that maybe there's some magic way that you can get it, that seems really attractive. And so people, you know, fall for this idea that all they have to do is envision it and it will... will happen for them. And so then the next thing that occurs to me is that people say, well, I don't know what to do. If I was going to take action, I wouldn't know what to do. That's one of the reasons why you ask that question, how can I? Because when you do that, it generates ideas. It causes you to notice resources around you that you weren't seeing before. It causes you to draw on internal resources that you didn't really know you had, courage, for instance, or persistence, or whatever it happens to be. And it also motivates you to take action. And then the big secret is none of the people in The Secret or anybody else that's successful really knows how they're going to do whatever they're going to do when they start.
Absolutely not. And I think that you, what you said is key. And one of the key things that people who don't ever move, you know, they just kind of sit and think about it and wait for something to happen. One, have to realize there's no sprinkle fairy dust. There's no magic wand. You have to be into action. But really what's important that I heard this once. It was so great. You have to give yourself permission to fail so you can give yourself permission to succeed. You have to know that at the end of a failure is just another beginning. If something happens and it doesn't go right, so what? Start over. Do it again. Most people don't move because they want to get it right the first time. They're so afraid of getting it wrong. Again, fear-based, scarcity-based, deprivation-based motivation doesn't get them anywhere. They're so afraid of failing that they don't want to move, or they're afraid of succeeding. I tell people that there's power in the truth. Be honest about why you're not moving. Be honest about why, because then you can handle that. I think the most damaging thing people can do to themselves is feed themselves some type of fabricated story that makes them feel better, and they think that everyone around them is buying it. Well, I tell them, I'm not pulling my nickel out. I'm not going to buy it. Get in action, and if it didn't work, then get in action with a new plan, but be in action.
Well, one of the things that I like to say is there's no failure. There's only feedback. So, you know, you take action and something happens. It's either what you wanted or something else.
Right.
And whatever it is, there's information there that allows you then to refine the next action. And, of course, there is a shortcut. Even if you didn't know anything, you could start off taking the best action you could think of, even if it was pathetic. And you'd learn something from it, and then you could take another action based on what you learned. And even if that didn't work, it would give you more information. And gradually, you would figure out how to get to where you wanted to go. But if you find someone else that's already been there, someone else that's already succeeded at what you want to do, or something that's like what you want to do, you can go to them and find out how they think and act. And you can borrow that at least to start, and that's a big shortcut. I always tell all my students, for any outcome you want, there's a certain way of thinking and acting that will get it for you.
Right.
And you have to find that way of thinking and acting, and then the more difficult part really is you have to be willing to adopt it. And that's where a lot of people have trouble. They're not willing to change their way of thinking and acting. They want to get the same, they want to get new results, but with
the
old way
thing.
Of thinking and acting.
Right. Well, if I can just give you a personal example of a lesson learned from me, and you talk about it's not a failure, it's feedback. I really love that because, you know, I think I've spent over the years as an entrepreneur probably about $200,000 in getting great feedback on how I hire people and the guidelines that I've hired people around. And so I appreciate replacing the word failure with feedback because I've gotten a lot of feedback, and I saw my hiring patterns that I hire people that loved Lisa and that was a fan of my work, but they weren't necessarily competent in the area that I need them to be competent in. So I've gotten great feedback. Now I hire my staff a lot slower. Number one, I take my time, and I really hire based on the facts, not on the emotion. And then another thing you just said that I really appreciate is find someone that's doing what you do, and I know, and now your listeners will know that I've come to you for your internet and your marketing savvy. Now being an entrepreneur for many years, I get, find the people that you consider to be the master, and then find the ones that you connect with in that area that you have a synergy with. That's been you for me in this area. And, you know, I think our friendship is really great because we fill each other up with different things that we need. And for you, with me, it's, I'm the people woman. I love people. Look into my eyes and hug me and let's talk. This whole internet thing, I haven't been moved by it. I wasn't passionate about it. And then as a businesswoman, I looked at the numbers. I looked at business growth. I looked at revenue opportunities. And I said, okay, I need to put on my student's hat. And I called you and I said, may I have time with you? And then when we sat down, I said, can I become your student? You so graciously said yes. And so I totally understand from what you just said. I've been on both parts of those, of that pendulum, and I appreciate both parts because the lessons are valuable. Now, I don't want to spend $200,000 again trying to get a lesson. You know, I'd rather fast track it and go to someone that I trust to get the lesson. So I totally agree with what you just said.
Well, you know, you went to school, in the school of life, and you paid however much you paid in tuition.
I did.
And you got the lessons in return for it.
Yes.
And, you know, the key is to try to pay the smallest amount of tuition and really get the lesson. When I was in my 20s, some relative died and left me $7,500, which was a lot of money to me then.
Of course, yeah.
Really a lot of money to me. And it was, I think, the greatest amount of money I'd ever had at one time. And so I invested it in the stock market. And I eventually lost all of it. And I was really, really miserable about the fact that I'd lost this largest amount of money I'd ever had my hands on. But now I am managing huge amounts of money because I make a lot of money. And what I learned by losing that $7,500, now I know how worth it was, because if I made the same mistake now, I would lose millions of dollars.
Right.
So even though, there's two lessons there. One was that I paid this tuition and it was really worth it. And second, there's a hidden benefit in things that happen that seem bad that you can't always see when they happen. I thought it was a terrible disaster then, but now I'm really glad that it happened, because otherwise it would have happened later with a larger amount of money.
And if I can take that to a more personal level for me, I had to learn the lesson, and I guess the power in the lesson and the giving ourselves permission to stand bigger, taller, and speak more boldly and loudly as a result of the lesson. I learned lessons on very personal notes as well as on business relationships. Like, I completely understand how to be in a relay relationship with someone, and what to request based on my feedback. I love the way you call my feedback, not my failures, in my past relationships where I didn't ask for what I needed, for what I wanted. I wasn't the example of how to love me. Now I'm the example of how Lisa is to be treated. Now, men, women, and every relay that I'm in, I feel the honor, I feel the love, I feel the, because I'm the first example of that. So I know we were talking business and learning from our lessons, but that's been really huge for me personally as well. And then I had to learn personally how to give myself permission to make a lot of money, how to give myself permission to live in a new community, how to give myself permission to be an international speaker. I had to, on a personal level, I had to allow myself to break through any place that anyone in my family had ever gone before. That was really huge for me as well, and giving myself permission to not know what's on the other side.
You know, that reminds me that it's several times in my career, I have run into someone, whoever it happened to be at the time, who caused me to set my sights much higher. One time, someone who was mentoring me said to me, your business is 10 times as big as it was at one point, right? And I said, well, yeah, I can think when it was 10 times smaller than it was. So you already know how to make your business 10 times bigger. What if it was 10 times bigger than it is now? Well, I wasn't thinking that big at the time.
What a great question.
And so I've had this happen 3 or 4 times in my life where somebody, I mean, I won't go into all the stories, but where somebody came along and really increased the vision of who I could be and what I could accomplish. And so, you know, you're going through some of that now. I mean, I just
got to tell you this, Bill. You do that for me.
Well, that's great. That makes me all tingly because I've had people do that for me, and that's what you want to do. You know,
yeah.
When somebody does something and makes a huge difference in your life, you want to pass it on to other people.
Yes.
And that's the kind of person you are, and I see you passing on what you know all the time because I see you in front of kids and adults too. So anyway, you know, I think that that's another key, and that's part of the gratitude thing too, is to pass things on to other people.
And I think I absolutely agree with you, and I think that when you look at it, what do I do first? What do I do? What are my steps? What are my practical steps? I do believe that it is to ask, to make a bold, what I would call outrageous request, but something that's realistic for you. For me to say, you know, I said 15 years ago, I want to change, touch, and transform teen lives. I want to teach teens how to fall madly in love with themselves and how to make integrity-based decisions. I want to transform 1 million teen lives. That was huge for me. That was crazy. Big dream. I'm living in South Central Los Angeles, you know, lived between the Harlem Crip 30s and the Rolling 60s. I was considered academically challenged in school. Didn't have 2 pennies to rub together that I could find. And I had this big dream. And I went forward as if it was so, as if it could happen. I didn't know that it couldn't, didn't tell myself that it couldn't, didn't quite know how, because I knew how to speak to teens, but I didn't know how to do business necessarily. And so I would say when you're looking at what's the first step, it's what do you want? What do you want? What design what it looks like. I think many people live as if their future equals their past or their past equals their future, even though in our life called Bill's autobiography, Lisa's autobiography, our first 25 chapters up until this very day, right here that we're speaking on this phone, up until this very day, every single chapter is already in print. It's already been written. We can't change it. So many people spend their life doing 2 things. One, trying to change the print that's already on the paper, trying to change the past. Why did that happen? Why couldn't I? Why? That's like the most universal question people ask, why? Well, everything happens for a reason, and you don't have to know the reason right now, but it's all made you who you are today, and your job is to be okay with that person. The second thing they do is they cut and paste old stories into the next chapter. You're cutting and pasting chapter 10 into chapter 29, and all of a sudden you have this repeated cycle of relationships, this repeated cycle of failed employment, this repeated cycle of dreary days, because I believe that people haven't held on to, and we need to grab a hold of the fact that I have a pen in my hand to write my next chapter, and I can write it any way I want to, irregardless of my last 10 chapters. I think when we get that we have that power of design, I think that's the most exciting part of my workshops, when I see the participants, adults or teens, but really when my teens do it, I get really excited. When I see they look in their eye, that look in their eyes, it's like, wow, I am the author of my story.
Well, and I know a lot of your story, your past story, and, you know, people see someone like you who's now appearing on Oprah and has been on other TV shows and is being offered big book deals and all kinds of other things, and they think, well, there must be something about her that's different than what about me. I get this all the time, too. People say, well, yeah, that's nice that you feel like you can create anything you want, but I have all these handicaps, and I have to tell them, as you could too. I say, well, believe me, I didn't pop out of the womb this way. I was miserable at one point.
Right.
I was lost. I didn't know what to do.
Right.
And I know a lot of what you've been through.
Right.
And, you know, where you are and what you've been through in the past has nothing to do at all with where you can go, other than there are a lot of lessons and things in the past that actually, if you change your thinking, help you to go where you want to go.
Bill, there is nothing nothing that anyone could tell me that could make me believe that they were any darker than I was at one time. And I mean that because at age 17, when my best friends were thinking of contemplating which college to go to, UCLA or USC, I was contemplating how to commit suicide without getting blood on my mother's carpet because I knew she couldn't afford to buy another house. That's what I was, and I believe that being suicidal is the darkest place anyone could ever go to. So anything between life, between death and where you are now is more than what I had. I didn't want to live, and I didn't necessarily want to die. I just wanted to get out of the pain.
Right.
So when I think, and that's one and some of them really important that people have to know, that people just want to relieve themselves from pain. So I know what it feels like to think more about what does it mean to leave this earth than what am I going to do while I'm here. I don't think there's anything below that, because when you're ready to give up like that, you're just ready to give up completely. And so I know the walk, and not one step along the way did anyone else have the power to give me permission to take the next step. I tell people the life that I live now, the ginormous life that I live now, and I'm really blessed to live a ginormous life now. I acquired this life by constantly taking one more step, by playing a little bigger today than I played yesterday, by listening to great friends like you saying, what would happen if I make it 10 times bigger? And I love that statement, can you make it 10 times bigger? Because I look at my business now, and I think my business is small compared to people like yours and Oprah's and that, but then, my God, it's huge compared to where it was 10 years ago. It's 10 times bigger, you know, and it was done one step at a time. That I was that same girl considered academically challenged in school. I was that same girl who struggled with not loving herself. That I believe that no one that looked like me with mocha skin, full lips, round hips, and an afro, no one that looked like me could do international work, could do global work. No one that came from my background would have the permission to touch teen lives. I gave myself all the stories. Why would someone like me be able to do it? The real question was, why not? Why am I not the perfect person? Why are you not the perfect person for the calling that has been placed on your life? Why are you not the perfect person to do that, to bring relief to the world in that way? Why are you not the perfect person? God used imperfect people to touch imperfect people. A friend of mine said that as I was crying the other morning. I was crying on my way to the Oprah Winfrey. Before I got on the plane to go to Chicago, I'm crying gratitude tears. I mean, just profusely. I mean, ugly tears. And I'm just crying, going, God, thank you so much for using me. In spite of all the times that I've gotten in your way, you still chose to use me. And a friend of mine was praying for me, and he said, that's because God uses imperfect people to touch imperfect people, and that if we give ourselves permission to be inside the lesson always, and be inside growth always, then we always get to move forward as long as we keep walking and moving. So I just, you know, I look today at my son, and my son, Jelani, has gone international before he turned 10. And I'm grateful for the opportunity that I said yes, and I invite you, and Bill, you said it, and I invite each person listening to say yes. Say yes even if your knees are knocking. Say yes. And play full out, because at the end of your journey, you don't want to say, my God, I live my life on the sidelines.
Absolutely.
I want to get in the game, even if I bump my knee and bruise my elbow. If I break my leg, I want to break my leg in the game, not stepping on a stair on the sideline.
You bet. Absolutely. So we talked about two main steps in this thing. The first one was the idea of focusing your mind on where you want to go and saying things like, how can I, you know, whatever it is you want to do, which is kind of what The Secret focuses on. This whole idea of putting your attention on what you want helps to make it happen. And then we talked about that second part about actually taking action, and that you
right.
don't, you know, you might not know what action to take at first,
right.
So you either model someone
right.
who, or you just take the best action you can think of
right.
and keep learning from it. I have found that there's one other part of this that I think is really important that also gets left out. And that is that the action you take, what you do, has to be of value to someone else. Because I mean, this is really the essence of what people call the law of attraction.
Yes.
If you want to get something, you know, I mean, people are very often, when they think of the law of attraction, they're thinking about getting some sort of prosperity. There's other things, too, like getting love and that sort of thing. But let's take prosperity for now. If you want money to come to you, you're going to have to give something of value for it. Because if you think about it, you don't ever take, unless it's like to your son or somebody you really love just for that reason, you don't give money to anybody else unless you're trading it for something that you want more than the money, something that's of value to you. So a lot of people get stalled because they don't realize that they have to be of value to the world in some way in order to have something come back to them. And some people don't have a lot at first that is of value. So there they are selling their labor for $12 an hour or something somewhere. And then they feel stuck. But they, you know, you can go out and figure out a way to be of greater value to people. And I know that's what you did. You probably didn't feel like you were of tremendous value at first, but you have constantly done things to learn how to be of greater value to other people, and that the compensation is really starting to flow to you now. So anyway, I'm just curious to know your take on that whole rant.
Well, I absolutely agree. Again, not surprised, you and I are just so connected synergistically in our thought pattern. I believe that, you know, when I first started my career, actually my venture as an entrepreneur and CEO of Motivating the Team Spirit, it was to transform and change teen lives. I had no idea what the financial value of that would be, but I knew what the human value of that would be, that if I can teach a teen to avoid the potholes that I went through or to step through them or to climb out of the valley that I was in at one time, if I can teach one teen, and my whole intent was I want to save teen lives one teen at a time, I want to empower teen lives one teen at a time, and my intentions in it, when I went in it, was truly to contribute to this world, to contribute to this planet, and as I became more savvy at it, and, of course, I got to tell you, I did a lot of them free. I said I was going to give 18 free workshops. Well, on my 42nd free workshop, Bill, I thought, maybe this plan needs to be revised.
Lost count somewhere.
Right. All of a sudden, people began to say, I never forget the first time I was paid $300. I was paid $300 to teach a workshop. I didn't know what to say. I thought I was supposed to say something different because I was being paid. And, in fact, they just saw value. Now, you know, my company does hundreds of thousands of dollars in workshops a year, but I'm doing the same thing with the same intention. Now, of course, I want to create revenue for my company, but here's the deal. I want to create as much wealth in my life so that I can do as much good in this world. It's still the same thing. I haven't changed. You know, now I'm excited that I drive around in my busy day in a better car than I used to. Yeah, that was important as well. And I don't apologize for that. But the intention of what I want to do and what I want to create still is the same. So I so agree that you have to give value and service, because if your hand is open to give, then your hand is also open to receive. And those of us, those who walk around with a tight hand saying, I got to hold on to everything I get, you won't lose anything, but you also won't create any space to gain any more than what you currently have. And you'll be constantly inside this cycle of, I need more, I want more, but you won't get more because your hands are too tight. And so releasing and giving and serving and showing up to create a higher value for other people, and that's not saying donate your life away and give your life away. I'm not saying that, but I am saying create a value in who you are, your intellectual property, your time, your contribution, what you do, and it will begin to come back to you, because life is a cycle. It's everything is on a big wheel. You know, you give good, you need to know it's coming back. You give something else, you need to know it's coming back. You know, you're right. I was in a place for a long time where I could not donate any money. I could not give away. I couldn't give any finances. I mean, my son and I, we were eating cabbage, carrots, and onion is what we had in our refrigerator at one time, and all I could make was stir fry. And so I didn't have money to give away, but I did have a skill. I have been gifted with the skill of facilitation and teaching people how to turn breakdowns into breakthroughs. So I kept giving that away and kept giving that away. Now my challenge is managing the abundance fiscally as well. So you're absolutely right.
You know, some people, while you were talking, I thought of this. Some people think somehow that there's something wrong with making money, or that, it's not spiritual to make money, or that if you're making money, you must be taking advantage of someone. And I think it's important that we clarify that, because I see, as you know, I make a lot of money, and I see the amount of money I make as being a measure of how many people I'm helping.
Right.
And there may be a few people in the world that manage to figure out how to make money by screwing other people or taking advantage of them in some way. But people aren't stupid, and they won't line up over and over in most cases to have somebody take advantage of them. So really, that is a misconception. The only way you can really accumulate a lot of money in this world is by serving a lot of people and being of value. So if that's the case, everybody should feel great about making money, because, I mean, even if you're, somebody that's working in, they're selling plumbing equipment or something. They may think, well, I'm not doing the same kind of things that Lisa Nichols is doing. But, you know, people need plumbing equipment.
Right,
and without it, they'd be fairly miserable. So all of those kinds of things, even things we think of as being really mundane, are helping and serving other people. And if you do a lot of it and do it well, you'll make a lot of money and you'll deserve to make the money. So I think it's really important that people not, they just have to get rid of this idea that there's something negative about making money.
If I can add this, I agree to you, and I struggled with that very same thing for years. I struggled with it, and I struggled with it for a couple of reasons. Number one, I had never had wealth around me. I didn't have it in my community, and yet I knew very early on that I didn't want to wear poverty. Poverty didn't fit me well. It didn't work for me, and I didn't like it. And I didn't even know that what we didn't have, because all of my needs were met as a child. My family, they met my needs, but I also knew what lack felt like. I knew what not having enough. I grew up in a home where my father said we couldn't afford that. 5 years after I graduated from high school, my father looked up one day and he said, "Lisa, where's your class ring?" I said, "Oh, I didn't get it." He said, "Why?" I said, "Because we couldn't afford it." He said, "Where's your Letterman's jacket?" I was an 8-time Letterman athlete. He said, "Where's your Letterman's jacket?" I said, "Oh, I didn't get it." He goes, "Why?" I said, "Because we couldn't afford it." He goes, "Where's your senior class pictures?" I said, "Oh, I didn't get it." He said, "Why?" I said, "Because we couldn't afford it." He said, "What made you think we couldn't afford it?" He said, "What made you think we couldn't afford it?" And I replied to him, "Because every time I ask you for other stuff, you say we couldn't afford it. So I just assumed we couldn't afford that as well." And I never forget the look on my father's face of hurt and pain, because I had taken on his conversation.
Yeah, and he probably didn't realize that he was impacting you in that way. But, that having that in your background, though, allows you, when you're teaching people now, to understand what
Absolutely.
It's like to be in that place. And
Absolutely.
I have many things in my background where I was, emotionally really miserable and everything, and I know what it's like for the people that I teach, because I have been there. I have sat in my living room all night long in the dark, about 2 feet from the wall, looking at the wall, thinking about suicide and how miserable I was and how hopeless it was. And I know what it's like to be in that place. And at the time, it wasn't a very good thing. But now when I look back, I'm glad that all that happened, because I wouldn't be able to do what I do now if I didn't know what it was like to be lost and know what it's like to find myself.
Here's the thing. I appreciate you saying that, and you and I are sharing very candidly. And here's what I really want people to get, that anywhere that you are is okay. If you're on the mountaintop, if you're at a high point in your life, design a way to stay there. But if you're going through a valley or you're going through a transition, that's okay and necessary, as long as if you're going through a dark part in your life or a low point in your life or a transition point, as long as you don't take out real estate and stay there.
Don't set up a pitch a camp.
Don't pitch a camp. Don't lease option buy. Just keep moving. I think what both of us are saying really clearly, and I appreciate your candidness because you just support me to keep opening up, is that every journey, every part of my journey is okay. Even this one today where this year, you know, I stand to triple, quadruple my income from last year, and that's huge for me. I'm now in a place where I don't even think in my wildest dreams I'd imagine, because I saw myself as I'm going to help teens in L.A., Los Angeles. Now I'm going to help teens on the West Coast, and now I'm going to help teens in the United States, and now, you know, I'm international on my way to South Africa. And this part of the journey is okay as well. When you talk about our perception that wealthy people in some way, there's something out of integrity about them, I am very happy to say that I'm creating wealth for my son, and I'm creating wealth and abundance for myself. I don't apologize for that. I've earned every step that I have taken. I earned that seat next to Oprah Winfrey. I earned the bank account balance that I have. I've earned that. And as long as we know that we've earned it, and as long as we know that at the end of the day we're doing the best we can with what we have, and that if the more we have, the better we can do, that there's no apologies. I used to think that if I got too wealthy or if my financial status changed, I would no longer be like the people in my community. Well, guess what? The best thing I can do for the people in my particular community is not have their same bank account balance. That's the best thing I can do for them, because then I can possibly teach and pull some people out. And so I used to really have to coach myself around finances, and I got through that. And you mentioned something. You said get someone that's better at it than you are. Get someone that's doing. I had to find people that had healthier financial conversations and healthier relationships to money than I did. And I asked them to show me, to teach me, to mentor me. And I'm excited that I've had that breakthrough, because now I can reach back, because I know that someone that's had a background like mine or a background like yours, they'll hear it better coming from someone like us. And I just have to tell you that all 12 years I qualified for free lunch when I was in school. My son doesn't qualify for anything, and I'm absolutely okay with that.
Yeah, really. Well, you know, this thing about bad things happening to you and they turn out later to be blessings in disguise reminded me, you know, the great Napoleon Hill used to say, every adversity carries with it the seed of an equivalent or greater benefit.
Mm.
And so what successful people do, what people who are really living the secret or the law of attraction, what they do is when something happens to them that they didn't really want to have happen to them.
They find something a diamond.
Yeah, something. They say to themselves, okay, what is the equivalent or greater benefit in this?
Right. What's the diamond? What's the diamond in this?
I don't have time to tell the whole story now, but and you may have heard me tell the story about when Centerpoint was very young, I got sued for $1 million by a competitor. And to make a long story short, when the sheriff handed me the lawsuit papers, and it was a frivolous lawsuit, but still I had no money to defend it, and I'd been reading Napoleon Hill and reading the part about learning from adversity, I went down into my basement in my office and I started to make a list of all the potential benefits of being sued for $1 million. And at first, I couldn't think of very many. I mean, I think the first one I wrote down was, well, I'll learn a lot about the legal system. It was something I didn't want to learn a lot about, really, but eventually, I had 60-some benefits on that list.
Wow.
Because I carried it around with me for about 3 or 4 weeks, and every time I thought of something, I added it. And I wish I still had that piece of paper, because somehow it got lost. But every single one of those benefits came true.
Yeah.
And
wow.
This is an example, though. You know, every day, all day long, things happen to people. Now, that's a pretty momentous thing to happen. But even if it's a small thing, you have a choice whenever anything happens to you. Are you going to respond to what happened by focusing on what you want Or are you going to respond by focusing on what you don't want? I could have gone down into my office and thought about all the things about that I didn't want, and they would have come true, and I would have felt terrible. But instead, because I was lucky enough to have been reading a very amazing teacher, Napoleon Hill at the time, I focused on all the things that I wanted, all those benefits that I wanted, and they all came true, and it gave me courage, and it made me feel better, and the thing got resolved to my advantage. And in fact, I wish I had time to tell the whole story, because Centerpoint would not exist if it had not been for that lawsuit. So anytime anything happens, you know, if your car gets broadsided and it's destroyed and you don't have any insurance, you know, you think, okay, what is the hidden benefit here? What can I get from this that will be beneficial to me? And believe me, if you start thinking that way, you'll think of something.
Absolutely. And that goes back to gratitude. I mean, what you're speaking of, you just gave an excellent example of a time where most people would get rigid and get resentful, and you went to gratitude. And when gratitude, where you give energy, it expands. And when you find gratitude in every situation, I know we said this earlier, but I can't say this enough. You know, I have three gratitude rocks, and I really touch them. And when I'm feeling frustrated, I go to them and I say, okay, I need find something right now to be grateful for. And it's not difficult. I don't have a difficult time, but there are times where I need to focus on that. You know, one of the things that I, you know, eat as personal as my weight, I gained a lot of unwanted weight. And I, in order for me to give myself permission to get back to the body that I wanted, I had to find the gratitude in my weight gain. Talk about difficult, Bill. I mean, when I found the gratitude and I said, I was able to build my character because I wasn't distracted, and I wasn't allowing myself to be distracted by all the tension that I got in this athletic body. But I built my character, I built my charm, and now I have the opportunity to sit inside a healthy life. I have to all these things, even in the most personal moment like that, it makes a huge difference. And I always say, you know, someone lost 40 pounds and I found it, and I'm still looking to return it to his rightful owner at this very moment. however, I love the package that I'm in today. I appreciate every inch, every pound. I appreciate my complexion now. I appreciate all the little things. I appreciate the big things like Oprah and the book deals, but I appreciate the fact that, you know, I have a little funny walk. I'm slew-footed on the right side. I'd rather love that about me than keep trying to change it, because one, it's mine. It's my fingerprint. I love, and by doing that, what I find is that people come to me and they find the most beautiful things about me as well. And I just think that all wraps into the package. That wraps into the business package. That wraps into the personal package, because I believe we bring our personal selves to every form of business that we do. And the more content and the more at peace I am with the personal me, the better the business I'll do.
Well, you're a great example for people, Lisa, because you have a great attitude, and
thank you.
And it shows, and it creates more of what you want in your life. We've probably got another 10, 12, 15 minutes. One of the things I wanted you to—I can think of 10 or 12 more things we could talk about, and we could go on for 3 hours doing this.
Easily.
But I want you to describe the training, you know, the Motivating the Teen Spirit training that you do for kids, because I think a lot of people that are listening to this might want to bring their kids to you to take one of these trainings, because I've seen you do it, and it's absolutely mind-blowing. So tell people a little bit about the training and what happens for the kids and how it ends up for them, and, you know.
Sure. It's one of my favorite topics. And by the way, we're launching something new this year, in that we're going to do some parent trainings as well, where we're going to have a seminar where we break the parents out in groups and teach them some of the techniques that we use with the team, so that you can take that learning home and apply it inside your home. So some of the things we do is, number one, we create what we call a safe space, that we as families assume that our children feel safe. We just assume that. And that's one of the biggest injustices that we do to our children, is we begin to assume about them, and we don't give them space to define what's real. So we create a safe space, and we create a safe space by three agreements. And mind you, I'm saying three agreements and not three rules, because teens are inundated with rules. You say they're rules, and they don't even hear you. Their ears go blank. They close their eardrums up, and they just nod and give you that blank look that we all have seen.
Yeah.
And so we have three agreements, which means they have the right to agree or disagree. And most parents, they first get rigid when they could disagree. Yeah, because if you get them into an ebb and flow and you get them into a relay, an engaged relay between you, then you truly have an engaged relay between you. And so the three agreements, the first agreement is no judgment, that we agree to not judge them and ask them to not judge us, and we agree to not judge ourselves as well. The second agreement is that there'll be no repercussions, that they can tell the truth about how they feel, and that we're not going to throw it back in their face and use it against them later. That's a huge agreement that, by the way, us adults can use as well. And the third agreement is the agreement to show unconditional love no matter what comes up and no matter what comes out, which means if you say something that I'm really excited about hearing, I love you. But if you say something that I really didn't care to hear, I'm going to still show you demonstrable love in that moment as well. I'm not going to play love takeaway. So that's real critical, Bill, that we set the room up. We don't make a move in that room until we've created a safe space, which I encourage parents to make at home. And then we begin to take them through what we call cognitive and interactive experiences.
Before you tell about that, you know, I've seen you do this, and these kids appreciate this so much.
They love it.
That when the parents arrive at the end for the graduation, they insist that you go through the rules, not the rules,
the agreements
with the parents, too, because nobody can come into the space without agreeing to the agreements.
And any time the space is compromised by an existing adult in the room or a new adult or a teen, we stop the process and make the room safe again. You cannot imagine, well, you can because you've been there, how much comes out, because they literally feel like we have a safe space. This is a different kind of space.
Yeah.
And when someone else comes in, even their own mom or even their own dad, they give us that look like, hello, say, create the safe space agreements. And we do. We have them make the agreements. And they raise their hands to the agreements. And so we've made this agreement in schools. We made it in auditoriums. We made it in churches. We made it in juvenile justice, in probation camps. We made it in high-performance leadership camps. We've made it everywhere, and all of a sudden it becomes the safe space room, you know. And every time we reconvene, we create that safe space again. And I got to tell you, my son, you know, we were sitting at dinner one night, and I said, son, you know, I heard you talk about such and such. You know, did you want to discuss it with me? He goes, Mom, before I say a word, we need to make a safe space. And he has me, Bill, raising my hand in the restaurant. And I'm going, son, do I have to raise my hand? He goes, Mom, raise your hand like we do in the workshop. And he added some additional things that he needed to make the space safe for him in particular, customized things that made him feel safer. And so it's important for us to have a responsibility to our children to give them safety, not safety from criminals and safety with a locked door of wear your seatbelt, but safety inside sharing their feelings, sharing their emotions, sharing their concerns, sharing their hopes and dreams and visions. We haven't made that space safe for them. And so we create a safe space, and then we take them into experiences. Now, here's the number one thing, without going through the details of what we do, because that's a whole lot of stuff that listening to it will kind of twist your head up. It's almost like you have to join us. You have to be in the room. You have to play full out. But here's the concept behind it. We don't ask those teens to go anywhere inside themselves, to say anything about their heart or their feelings or their mind, to express anything about what's going on for them that we're not willing to do ourselves first. We often ask more of our kids than what we're giving. We ask them to do as we say and not as we do. We ask them to listen while we talk when we're not necessarily listening. We ask them to tell us what's wrong with them when we're not telling them what's wrong with us, unless what's wrong with us has to do with them. We put them at the end of our hurt, at the end of our shame. I'm so ashamed of you. I'm so ashamed because of you. I'm so hurt by you. That's just, I mean, we're beating down their spirits. We're dampening their lights. And so inside our workshops, One, we level the playing field, and that's very key. We level the playing field. So if I ask them, when have they done something really, really stupid? I mean, something that you like said, I know this is stupid. Why am I doing it? And you go ahead and do it anyway. Before they even answer me, I have to give them a part of me that's done the same thing. And not all the stuff from my old days when I was your age. They're so tired of hearing that when I was your age. We were never their age in this year. We were never their age in this time. And so I give them now stuff now, or just last week stuff, or just last year stuff, but not 30 years ago stuff. I give them stuff, real things now, so they get to see that we're still inside learning. And guess what? The more of me I peel back, the more of them they peel back. And so I literally ask them to take baby steps with me as I take baby steps with them. And magic happens. Magic happens. And then, believe it or not, when their parents come in the room, they want the same experience with their parents, because I'm a nice lady, but they don't know me. They just met me. I'm their new best friend. But they have relationship with their moms and dads and sisters and brothers. They just don't quite know how to start that new relay.
Yeah. Well, I've seen parents talking to kids at the end of your trainings, and everybody is crying for happiness. And kids are saying things to parents that they've always wanted to hear their kids say. And then the parents say things to the kids that the kids have always wanted their parents to say. It's just quite amazing.
Well, you know, one of the things we do, I just want to say this, is inside of relationships, the hardest thing to do is to express ourselves, because we're trying to combine two things, logical communication with all of this emotion. And oftentimes it's like an 8-ounce glass, where 50-50 is really good, 50% logic, 50% emotion. But normally inside our relationships, especially with our children, with our spouses, there's like 7 ounces of emotion and 1 ounce of logic. And so it's hard to kind of make sense of how I'm feeling. So things blurt out. We throw things out that we wish we could bring back, and once they fall off our tongue, we can't. And so what we do as facilitators is we simply help and assist on facilitating a valuable conversation. So we give them what we call sentence stems, where we begin the beginning of the sentence and they finish that sentence with whatever is true for them. And we keep guiding that sentence until they can kind of pick it up themselves. And boy, you've seen it. It's amazing when they get their own momentum and they know how to start those sentences. So we give them a new language structure, a new way of communicating with each other. We give them, instead of saying, I don't like it when you do that, we give them the language, it will work better for me if you would. We just give them guidelines to play. We don't tell them you can't ever argue again. We just give them tools to disagree with. We give them tools to agree with. We give them tools to acknowledge each other. The best thing is I never forget seeing this young girl. She looked at her mom and she said, Mom, I know I don't tell you that I love you, but deep down inside, I really, really love you. You're a single mom and what you do for me is amazing. And I know I don't tell you that I love you, but I do love you. And the mom, attempting to talk with tears streaming down her face, she said, I never, ever expected you to say these words to me. This is the best gift I could ever get for Mother's Day. The best gift. And then everyone always goes, Christmas in May, Christmas in July. Whatever month it is really Christmas, because that's the gift of having your child back. Mm-hmm. That's the gift of having your parent back. And so I commend you because you are one of the individuals that have stepped up to get our kids back, to bring our children back home to us, not just physically but emotionally. You've put up your intellect. You supported me to expand my business. You put up your financial resources to sponsor children, to become a second chance angel and create workshops. You've created a space, and so I want to salute you because, you know, I said 10, 15 years ago, I want to touch 1 million teens, and that was a big, lofty dream. But today, you know, we've done 75,000, and I'm really happy. We got a lot of work to go, but we're ramping up, and it's because of people like you that keep the conversation about our children. I say that the law of attraction, the secret, transformational work, it's all very important, but we can't just live it for ourselves. We have to bring our children along.
Well, it's certainly my pleasure I feel grateful that I've managed to accumulate enough resources that I can do things like this and give back in some way. So I just feel grateful myself to be able to do it. Can you give me kind of a some sort of a picture of the way a teen might be at the beginning of the training and what they're like at the end? Or maybe there's even a specific story of someone that would illustrate that?
Absolutely. When they come in, they're very guarded. They're very guarded because they're expected to be told what they're doing wrong. And this happens regardless of their cultural background, regardless of their economic background. We have just as many high-end wealthy youth as we have inner-city disadvantaged, disenfranchised youth. And they come in ready to be told what's wrong, ready to be dictated to, every single one of them. They come tight, they come reserved, they come guarded. And as they go through the experience, and they one see that we're sharing the same way we're asking them to share, and all these other teams are opening up, as the space becomes safe, they begin to turn that floodgate on, like, oh my God, I think this may be the only place I can get all of it out. So let me not hold back. And they become flooded. When I first start the workshop, and I have them talk for a minute to each other, they kind of look at me after like 30 seconds, like, okay, is it time to stop? And then, you know, several hours into the workshop.
Yeah, I know what you're going to say you can't get them to shut up.
Right. Several hours into the workshop, I go, okay, and stop. And they go, but I wasn't finished yet, Miss Lisa. And so all of a sudden they find this place where I'm not ridiculed, I'm validated, I'm encouraged, and one of the key things, oh God, I got to tell you this, whenever they say something like, I feel like my parents only love me when I'm doing good, I ask the question every time someone shares, if you feel that way, raise one hand up. If you really feel that way, raise two hands up. If that's really, really you, raise two hands up and stand up. And when your hand is in the air, look around so that you can see that you're not alone. Bill, I cannot tell you the impact of that room when those teens share those sacred secrets that they've been ashamed of for so long, and they see another teen raise one hand, another teen raise two hands, and five teens stand up. Then they go, oh, my God, I'm not alone. See, the number one reason for depression is that we feel alone. The number one reason why seven teens a day commit suicide is because they feel alone. So if you want to immediately impact their lives, let them see that they're not alone. I mean, that shift alone, I mean, the one of the best examples was this young white girl, 17 years old, her father was an attorney, mother was a psychologist. She lived in Carlsbad, had no financial needs. She was sitting next to an African-American young man who was in a group home, who was on probation, who was on house arrest with an ankle bracelet around him. I mean, they had no more in common. She was the national spokesperson for the Kiwanis Club. He was on probation. And they were each other's partner. She had ripped all the heads off of all of her trophies. And she said in the workshop, I'm suicidal. I didn't want to live when I came here. And he raised two hands and stood up. And she looked at him, and he looked at her. And at that very moment, Bill, this African-American male who didn't have a mom or a dad connected with this young white girl who seemingly everyone thought her life should be perfect. Why are you sad? They found their common ground. They found that place to connect. And they became partners in the next exercise. And all of a sudden, every perception she had to be melted away. Every perception he had to be melted away because they found their likeness in one another. And at the end of the workshop, she says, well, I have no idea how I'm going to explain you to my mother and my father that I have a new friend like you. And he said, well, honey, I don't know how I'm going to explain you to my homeboys. But they agreed that they would make an effort. What we did that day was we helped two people who were in pain find their common ground, and then turn the breakdown into the breakthrough. Her mother and her father came to the workshop, and they were very rigid because they didn't want to be perceived as bad parents. And it was amazing what she did. She stood up in front of the room, and she said, Mom, Dad, she said, I need to tell you something about me. She said, and I need you to let me own my own choices. She said, when I came here, I was suicidal. I didn't want to live. She said, and that was my choice. She said, because I didn't know how to open up and talk to you. She said, but I've learned how to find my voice. And then he stood up, And he talked to his group home counselor, and he said, when I came here, I was angry, and I was resentful, and I wanted to hurt people because I was so angry that my father left me when I was a baby. He said, but now I realize that the only thing he was supposed to give me was life.
Well, I'm assuming that everybody listening to this is probably doing the same thing I'm doing, which is choking up as you tell these stories, and I've heard you tell these kinds of stories before, and it's always very, very moving. One of the things I think is the most moving, I'm sure, you know, the most moving part of your seminar is when you ask the kids who
yes.
felt before the seminar or still if they were suicidal, and you've created such a rapport with these kids and such a safe space that, well, you describe how you do it.
Well, we've had a safe space now for a period of time. We've built trust. We've taken great risk with them, and we're all in it together, and they know that. And I ask, I tell them, I say, I have to ask you a very hard question, a difficult question that I never like to ask. I don't like to ask the question. But it's my job to ask this question so that we can be here for each other. And then I ask, how many of you were suicidal, were contemplating suicide frequently? And I want you to get how I asked you, were contemplating suicide frequently prior to this workshop. And then I ask them to not raise their hand, to not just stand where they are, but to get up and walk to the front of the room. And I'm asking them to do this with their parents seated next to them. So there's a huge, you know, risk, opportunity. I ask them to stand next to me because I was once in that space as a suicidal teen.
And their parents are freaking when this happens,
freaking.
I'm sure.
As they stand up, you can just hear the tears bursting out in the room. And a part of it's very hard to know that that parent is about to feel that level of pain, but another part I get that, no, I'm doing you a favor. We are doing something good here. We are letting that demon called secrecy, we are disempowering that demon called secrecy, and we're letting this out so that we can support each other. And the parents are crying, and then I ask the teens, and I got to let you know, Bill, that in a room of 70 teens, I've had as many as 35 teens stand up.
Yeah.
70 teens, 35 teens walk to the front, and we go one by one down the line and ask them, based on the tools that you've received, based on the tools that you've received from this workshop, do you choose to live? And if so, say, I choose to live. And if you still need more support, say, I need support. And I got to tell you that they go down one by one, and they either say, I choose to live, or I need more support. And I'm pleased to say that of all the teens that have said that they frequently were contemplating suicide prior to the workshop, we haven't lost one. We've kept every single teen. They've all chosen to stay alive and use the tools. And I got to tell you that the teens that go through this workshop one time, the number one request normally is, when are we doing this again? When are we doing this again? When are we doing this again? Because they want to keep visiting that safe space to keep discovering more of themselves. And so, you know, right now, thank God, we've prevented now over 1,900 teen suicides on record. You know, I can't keep updating my bio as quickly as we're touching teen lives. But, you know, that's a quality problem again. But we always ask that question no matter where we are. And we're really pleased that they always stand up and tell the truth out loud. And I have to tell you, Bill, I never ask that question without hoping that I end up standing up there alone. I always pray that I'm standing up there alone. It hasn't happened yet, but I believe, and I'm not saying this to be braggadocious, I'm simply standing in the greatness that the universe has allowed me to do. I know that there are nearly 2,000 teens that have chosen to live as a result of something they experienced in one of those workshops. I'm pleased about that. I'm happy. I'm not asking God to take me home tonight, but if I went home tonight, if I transitioned to my next life tonight, I know that I spent today in my passion and in my purpose. I was doing the work that I was put here to do.
Well, you're doing great stuff, and that's one of the reasons why I've been very supportive of you and will continue to be very supportive of
you.
You know, to get teenagers who often won't say a word to their parents about anything significant to actually get up in front of a room and acknowledge that they've been thinking of killing themselves is, you know, an amazing testament to how safe they feel with you and how much practice in just 3 days you gave them in actually talking about what's really true for them instead of, you know, continuing to BS everybody, which is what a lot of them are doing when they come in there. So I really, what you do is really amazing, Lisa, and we just got to get you doing it more and more and more of it for more people, which is exactly what's happening here. So
yes.
Anyway, well, tell people how they can find out more about you, and find out how they can send their child to one of your workshops if that's what they want to do.
Absolutely, and they can play in many different ways. I mean, you can go to lisanicholsonline.com. Again, that's Lisa Nichols, N-I-C-H-O-L-S, online.com. And you can play in many ways. If you have a teen that's yours or someone that you love or someone that you just really want to help, then plug them into one of our workshops. Look at our online calendar and plug them into one of our existing workshops. If you don't have a teen but you say, gosh, I have a passion for working with teens and I really believe that I want to do this, and this is what I've been looking for. I get so many emails from people all around the world saying, this is what I've been looking for. Then sign up for the facilitator training, because I can't do it all by myself. I definitely am looking to build an army, a network of talented individuals. So sign up for our training. Say you want to be trained. And then if you, neither one of the first two apply to you, but you say, I just want to be a part of the solution, you know, and you want to be a second chance angel, then I invite you to go click on Motivating the Teen Spirit and become a second chance angel. You can sponsor an entire workshop, or you can sponsor teens into a workshop. And what I love about sponsoring a workshop or sponsoring teens is that we invite you to come to that graduation so you can see exactly how your dollars were spent. I think I love to give, but the one thing I want to know is that I gave to a cause that did what they said they were going to do. And we want you to see that. And so you're welcome to play in any way that fits you. And if none of those three ways fit you, then pray for us. Just hold the possibility that teens can have a new beginning in a moment, that like we get breakthroughs, they get breakthroughs as well. Like we get a shift, they get a shift as well. Like we can invoke the law of attraction, they can invoke it as well. Become a cheerleader. Do something outrageous for a teen, even if it's listening more than you talk to them. Mm. So anyway, any one of those four ways will work for me.
Well, I'll tell you that, you know, as you know, I've sponsored a number of
a ton
kids
of teens,
one of them that I did attend the graduation. I know that I had at least a hand in saving 13 lives, because there were 13 kids at that one that stood up and said that prior to that they were suicidal.
Doesn't that feel good, Ben?
And yes, I mean, that's what I was going to say, is I highly recommend the benefits of sponsoring kids to go through your program, because knowing that you saved a life, and there are other benefits of doing it too, because even the kids that aren't suicidal, you're doing something dramatic to change their whole way of seeing themselves and their relationship with their parents and the rest of the world. So knowing that you're helping in this way, I mean, if you're going to donate money to something, boy, there's few things where the actual tangible results are more obvious than helping these kids go through Motivating the Teen Spirit. So that's my little commercial for Lisa Nichols.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And again, I salute you, because, you know, I can only do my part. And it's through partnerships that we've been able to touch almost 100,000 teens directly. And who knows what the ripple effect has done. So, you know, thank you for walking your talk, Bill.
Well, you're welcome. And I think the best days of all of this are ahead
yet
of us.
Yet to come.
And I know not only are you going to reach your goal of 1 million kids, but you're going to get to a point where you're going to say, gee, we have to increase that goal, because because there's more than 1 million kids that need this.
Yeah.
Anyway, Lisa, it's been really a pleasure to talk to you this way. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I've had the pleasure of sitting at my kitchen table with you, talking to you about these kinds of things, and it's I'm glad to talk to you now. So go off now to your next wonderful accomplishment, and thanks so much for being here, and I appreciate everyone who was here to hear this, and I'm sure you all benefited from listening. So I'll just say to everybody, and you too, Lisa, be well.
Thank you so much, Bill. My pleasure.
You bet. Thank you so much for listening to this conversation with another of the Masters of the Secret. I know this information will help you master the secret yourself, the fact that what you focus on is created in reality. To thank you for listening, I have a very special free gift for you. As I've worked to master the secret and implement it in my own life, one of the most powerful tools I've used is Holosync audio technology, which, when listened to using stereo headphones, places the listener in deep states of meditation, literally at the touch of a button. In addition to many mental, emotional, and spiritual benefits, Holosync creates an ability to focus your mind so powerfully that manifesting what you want becomes easy. I'd like to send you a free Holosync CD so you can try it yourself, along with a free special report explaining how it works and all the amazing benefits it's created for nearly 300,000 people who've used it in 173 countries. To get your free Holosync CD, just go to themastersofthesecret.com/free CD. Remember to put the in front of Masters of the Secret. themastersofthesecret.com/free CD. Thanks again for listening, and I look forward to being with you again next time.